Hi, my name is Scott Bellis. I played Max Fennig on The X-Files, and you're listening to the X-Cast.
And welcome back to the X-Cast, The Truth Is In Here. I'm Carl Sweeney, guest hosting once again, and today we're talking about the 24th episode of Season 2 of The X-Files, which is Our Town. And it's my pleasure to be joined to discuss this episode. Returning to The X-Cast is Amy Walker. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Carl. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. So what I should mention to the listeners at this stage is this is a second recording for Our Town. We recorded this originally about 3 or 4 months ago, I think. We got it in nice and early. But we were plagued by recording problems, audio trouble. So this is our second attempt at it. So it's not a problem. What it does allow me to do, Amy, is to ask you a little bit about season 11. Because since I last spoke to you, obviously the announcement has come. We're getting 10 new episodes of The X-Files in 2018.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about that? And what are you hoping for from the new set of episodes?
Well, I think it's awesome news. I think each time they keep bringing it back is great. I've not up to the point where I'm completely up to date on it myself. I'm about 4 episodes away from the end of season 8, so I'm a little bit behind, but I'm excited by the fact that I'll be able to watch it as it comes out when season 11 is actually here. What am I hoping for? Well, from the little bits I've heard about season 10, one of the criticisms I saw was that people were wanting more Skinner, and as someone who really likes Skinner, I think, you know, more Skinner the better, so hopefully they'll get Mitch Pileggi into it a lot and make good use of him, because the point where I'm watching at the minute, season 7 and 8, he's been really involved in that, in the show, and it's really nice to see people other than Mulder and Scully in the universe, so I think just building on that with the new series would be good.
Okay, that's fair enough. So more Skinner, I think that's a common... that's a lot of fans want to see more of Mitch Pileggi, that's fair to say. Just before we move on then, I just wanted to give the listeners a few links. So this is different ways to get in touch with us. So if you want to drop us an email, our address is thexfcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @thex_cast, and you can go there, and our X-Files episode tournament is one thing we do on there, and that's hotting up as it gets towards the latter stages. For any X-Files discussion or news, we're on Facebook. So our Facebook group, if you search for X-Cast, you should find the X-Cast podcast and X-Files fan group, and we'd love you to join us there if you haven't already. And just finally, if you haven't done so before, if you could give us a review on iTunes, just take 60 seconds or so to type out a sentence or two about us and give us a rating. That would be helpful, because it would mean our podcast is more visible and it's more likely that other X-Files fans will find us, basically. Okay, so Amy, you've been on the X-Cast before. You were on with me, actually, on the Christmas quiz episode, but this is the first regular episode you've been on, so we need to get a bit more information about your X-Files fandom. So I've asked you these questions before, obviously, on our first recording.
Yeah.
But I'll pretend to be surprised by your answers here. Oh, maybe you've rethought them. I don't know. So I want to ask you the 5 questions of X, Amy. Are you ready?
Yeah.
And the first one is, when did you first discover the X-Files?
Well, the X-Files was something that I can always remember being there. It was something that I remember my parents would occasionally watch, and my nan as well, because she used to like a bit of sci-fi and a bit of weird, so I'd catch a bit of the odd episode here and there that they'd recorded off TV or anything like that. But the first time I remember sort of watching a full episode was I got bought the Tombs video box set, the UK boxes where they'd come with certain related episodes, so that had Squeeze and Tombs on there, and that was really cool. And a bit later on, I got bought the Abduction box set. And I remember just watching those over and over and over, and it was not a show that I ever watched as it was airing. It's always been one that I've been catching up on, but yeah, it just seemed to be that stage of the 90s where it was, like, season 3 or 4, it was so big, even over here in the UK, that everyone knew who Mulder and Scully was, and it just permeated pop culture to the point where you couldn't avoid it, and it was kind of awesome, really.
Yeah, those VHS boxes, they were great ways to sort of catch up, weren't they? I remember there was one, the unopened file, which was the Anasazi trilogy.
Mm.
And I was always seeing them out of order, like you say.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were just a great experience, great way to discover the show.
Said about it being out of order, it always surprised me the first time I watched season one properly that Tombs and Squeeze weren't back-to-back episodes like they were on the VHS. It was like a season apart, and that always threw me.
Yeah, they did a decent job of sort of splicing them together, didn't they? That's right. All right, so what's your favourite episode then? Albeit you haven't seen, you know, there's some episodes... I mean, there's an episode in season 10, Mulder and Scully Meet the Weremonster, which is a big fan favourite, but obviously you haven't seen it yet. So of the ones you have seen, what's your favourite?
My favourite one that I've seen is Detour in season 5, which is the episode where Mulder and Scully run across the Mothmen in the forest. And I know it's not a big mythology episode, and it's not one of the scariest episodes, but there's something about it that I really like. I think it's the mix of a really cool monster of the week, because they're going through the forest with the heat cameras trying to find them, but then you've got some great little character moments, like when Mulder and Scully are sleeping on the log in the middle of the forest and Mulder gets her to sing to him, and it's a nice little self-contained episode that has some great monster of the week beats, but also just showcases the characters really well.
Yeah, because it's also got that scene, Scully sort of reflects on her cancer experience a bit, doesn't she? So there's quite a lot to Detour, in addition to the fact that it's funny and it's scary. Yeah, it's a great choice. So that's in season 5. Is that your favourite season, or would you choose another one?
I think I do enjoy season 5 quite a lot. There's a few standalone episodes in there that I think are really good, and that's where the mythology started to really ramp it up as well. There's a few mythology episodes in there that did a lot more than the earlier seasons seemed to, or at least they had more of those big mythology arcs in season 5 that definitely made it stand out. Plus, it building towards the movie as well. I think they kind of knew where they were heading, so they put a lot more effort into the mythology stuff and had a clearer destination with, we're going to go into the movie, so we're going to have to do this, this and this, rather than the traditional TV thing of we'll make it up as we go along.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's at the end of the cultural moment that you sort of talked about when the X-Files was everywhere. So season 5 probably is at the tail end of that, but it's still a time when it was pretty much everywhere, and it really tapped into the zeitgeist, as it were. And you've got great episodes like Bad Blood, Detour, like we've already mentioned, in addition to the mythology episodes. You mean things like Patient X, I guess, and Redux 2. Yeah, so overall it's a very strong season, and there's not too many dud episodes in season 5, is there? It's quite solid all the way through.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching season 5 recently, and Bad Blood is one that was very close to being one of my favourite episodes as well. I think it's a brilliantly done episode.
I don't think I've ever come across an X-Files fan who would disagree with that, but maybe there's someone out there who doesn't. Let us know if you are. Okay. So I think I remember what you said to this question last time, but who is your favourite character on The X-Files? Whether it's Mulder or Scully, or a recurring character, or just somebody who appeared once, who would it be?
Mine would be Skinner. I enjoy the fact that when he first came in, he was like the third boss they had, and before that they were all just arseholes, really. And he started off in that same kind of vein, and slowly over time you saw him sort of go against the smoking man with little things like telling him to leave his office, and then eventually full-blown giving Mulder his address so he can go and hold him up at gunpoint, and then becoming a believer in the supernatural and the paranormal, just becoming a part of the team out there in the field with Mulder and Scully. I think his journey was a really good one. It kind of similar to Scully's in a lot of ways, but coming from a different point of view and with different experiences, and I really enjoyed what his character did, and some of the choices they made with him were really good.
Skinner's a character who gets mentioned a lot when this question is asked, and it's hard to disagree. Mitch Pileggi's just so good, isn't he? I mean, he just radiates intensity whenever you see him on screen.
I don't think there's ever been a role of his where I thought it was bad. He's just a great TV actor.
Yeah, and not to spoil too much for season 10, but it's a bit of a shame that he's been there for 25 years and he's still not been promoted from assistant director. But it means he's still, he still factors into the X-Files, so that's good.
But then with him always helping Mulder and Scully, it's probably a bit political.
Yes,
I dare say if he stuck with his original job of being a dick, they'd have promoted him by now.
Yeah. Okay, so finally, Amy, for the five questions of X, what's your favourite moment from the show? And this can be a scene or just an exchange of dialogue or anything really. What's your favourite individual moment?
My favourite one is from the episode Triangle. It's the second sequence where you have the lone gunman coming to Scully and saying that Mulder's missing. And then it's her running about the FBI headquarters trying to find Mulder, trying to get information about where he is, talking to Skinner. And the way it's shot and the energy in the scene, the fact that it's... I don't know if it's done in one continuous shot or if they had some sneaky cuts in there, but it at least feels like one big shot. It's just so well put together and acted, and has some great funny moments in there as well, like Scully threatening people and then she's kissing Skinner in the lift, and it's just a really fun piece of X-Files where you get to see Scully kicking ass and taking names and get to see what the show can do when it's at its best.
Yeah, I think that's the best section of Triangle. I like Triangle a lot, but I think that's the standout portion of it. And yeah, the energy you speak about, yeah, it comes from Gillian Anderson, a lot of it, doesn't it? She's very, very, she's up for that scene, clearly. But like you say, the camera movement as well. I think it's the illusion of one continuous take. I think when the elevator doors open and close, there's a couple of moments where they do a sneaky take, a sneaky cut there. But I might be wrong. Yeah, and it's unlike anything they did anywhere else in the series, really, isn't it? So sort of visually experimental as well.
Yeah, it was a brave choice doing an episode that's essentially three scenes or four scenes, whatever it was, but it was just a fun little experiment that I think paid off, and the X-Files did that quite a bit. They're really good at trying new things, and that's one that definitely stands out as a very obvious attempt at something different.
Yeah, it's such a unique series, isn't it? Because the sort of premise of it builds in the opportunity to play around by doing stuff like that, whereas a lot of other series just can't really break the bounds of what the show's about in the same way. So Chris Carter was really onto something when he... And the others, obviously, the other writers who helped him push the bounds as they went on through the series. All right, Amy, so that's the five questions of X. We've got a nice gauge of your X-Files fandom there. Let's turn our thoughts then to the episode Our Town. Our Town is the 24th episode of season 2. It's the penultimate episode of the season. Anasazi's the finale, and that's next up. It originally aired on May the 12th, 1995. It was written by Frank Spotnitz, and this is his first standalone script for the series after he wrote Endgame earlier in the year. And the episode was directed by Rob Bowman. And the plot sees Mulder and Scully travel to Dudley, Arkansas, to investigate the disappearance of a government health inspector. The agents discover that the missing man was about to recommend the closure of a local poultry factory, and that this may be connected with the case.
George Kearns was a federal poultry inspector assigned to Dudley, Arkansas, home of Chaco Chicken.
I'm not questioning the legitimacy of the case, just their motives in assigning it to us. I mean, doesn't it bother you at all that they're trying to undermine your work?
Oh, they may think they are, but on the night that George Kearns disappeared, a woman on the I-10 saw a strange fire in an adjacent field.
Yes, I read that report. She claims that she saw some kind of a foxfire spirit. I'm surprised she didn't call Oprah as soon as she got off the phone with the police.
Folk tales dating back to the 19th century from the Ozarks describe people being taken away by fireballs. It's supposed to be the spirits of massacred Indians.
Those are only legends, Mulder.
Well, most legends don't leave behind 12-foot burn marks. That photo was taken by state police in the field where the woman claims to have seen foxfire.
This could have been made by anything, a bonfire.
I thought so, too. Until I remembered this. A documentary I saw when I was in college about an insane asylum. It gave me nightmares.
I don't think anything gave you nightmares.
I was young.
Well, they took me away. They took me away. The fire demons. The fire demons wanted their pound of flesh. But, I'm too fast for him. You can't let him kill you. let them kill you. Oh, no. No, no, don't let them kill you. Don't let them kill you. That's no way to get to heaven. No, sir. No, sir. That is no way to get to heaven.
His name is Creighton Jones. He pulled off the road on May 17th, 1961 to take a nap. They found him 3 days later so deranged by what he'd encountered that he had to be committed. The state police found his car on the I-10, right in the middle of Dudley, Arkansas, home of Chaco Chicken.
Okay, Amy, so out of 10, what would you give this episode? And in general, what are your thoughts on it?
I'd probably give it about a 7. I think it's probably like a middle sort of X-Files episode. It's not one of the best. It's not a bad episode. It has a nice little mystery in it as to what's happening, because they make you think it's going to go a certain way at the beginning, and then they kind of switch that halfway through. It's kind of almost routine, but yeah, I don't really know how to describe it other than it does its job well. You know, it doesn't wow you, but it keeps you going for that 45 minutes without leaving you bored, really.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's a good, solid episode as well. I know there are some people out there who think this is a very underrated episode, and I don't quite agree for a couple of reasons, which I'll come on to. But I'd give this, I think the first time we recorded this I said 6, but I watched it again before recording again, and I'm going to give it a 6.5, so it's very gradually crept up in my estimation. It's one of those episodes where you've got a town with a secret, and we get quite a few of these episodes through the run of the series. Things like Roadrunners is one that springs to mind, or Arcadia is, in a different way, obviously a community with a secret. And I don't think it's the best example of that kind of episode, but I don't think it's a bad one by any means. I think there's lots to like here, and we'll try and unpick that as we get through. I think it runs out of steam a bit at the end, is what I would say. Especially when Scully gets kidnapped. I don't think that's done in a particularly impactful way. This feels like the kind of episode, the last X-Cast episode I was on was the Kalashari, and in that episode Mulder and Scully are quite peripheral to what goes on, especially at the end. And this feels like it should be another episode like that, where they don't get too personally caught up in what happens. So when she gets kidnapped by the Colonel Sanders kind of surrogate figure for 5 minutes at the end, I don't think it really, you know, is that exciting. That's what I would say, especially because she's been kidnapped and abducted quite a few times already in the series by this point.
Yeah, it's almost a paint by numbers. It's like, what can we do at the end? Scully gets kidnapped, yeah, sure, throw that in kind of decision. Yeah.
I mean, how scary do you think this one is? What would you say about that?
I'd say it has its moments. I think the teaser has a nice creepy atmosphere, especially as you have no idea what's going on when the masked figure appears, like who it is, what it is, because it being the X-Files, it could be anything other than being human. And there's a few bits towards the end as well, when just before Scully gets kidnapped, where she's creeping around the house, that are they're kind of effective. But there's a lot of stuff in the middle that is just them going around talking to different people in the town, so it kind of, it loses that air of horror in the middle.
Yeah, I think it takes a little while to reveal what's going on, doesn't it? And I think that's probably a good thing, that there's an air of mystery to proceedings, isn't there, until we finally figure out exactly what's happening. So it's not one of those episodes where we've sussed everything out by, you know, 5 minutes in. That's what we think. On IMDb, this gets an 8.1 out of 10, and that's from a rating, well, that's been rated by 2,309 people. But 8.1 out of 10 is quite high, obviously. To put it in context, though, that puts this episode 13th out of 25 from the other season 2 episodes. So right down the middle in terms of the second season. Do you think that's fair?
I probably wouldn't have put it in the middle. Probably lower middle. I think there's definitely some episodes in season 2 that are, again, kind of average episodes, but do it a little bit better. That seem to have a little bit something more to it. Yeah, so it's only one above what I gave it out of 10, so can't disagree too much with it, really.
Yeah, and IMDb, you've almost got to apply a bit of a filter to it, because it does skew on the high side of things. Yeah, I think somewhere in the middle for season 2 is, you know, I can't argue with that too much. What I would say is, I think it's one of those episodes that you sort of forget about, or at least I do. So whenever I go back to season 2 and it's been a while, you know, it's one that sort of creeps up on you a bit. It's good, it's solid, there's lots to enjoy. albeit there's not enough there to make it one of the great episodes. Okay, so we've talked about it in general terms. Now it's time to take a bit more of an in-depth look at our town. Okay, so just before we talk about the teaser, I think the title of this episode is a nod to the play by Thornton Wilder with the same name, which I haven't seen. I'm not familiar with it, but from what I can gather, that's also about community, thematically. And the plot of the episode is inspired by the film Bad Day at Black Rock, which is a film with Spencer Tracy, which I'd recommend to anyone who hasn't seen it. I think it's from 1954 or something like that. And teaser's quite an interesting sequence, I think. So it starts off with this guy, George Kearns, we later find out his name is. He's taking a young woman out to the woods, who we later learn is one of the factory workers. It's kind of an extramarital tryst, isn't it? But she leads him out to the woods. He's ill. We find out he's got some kind of problem. He's kind of clutching his chest, isn't he?
He seems to get over it quite well, considering how horrible his little attack is.
Yeah, that's really sudden, isn't it? Because he she gets out the car and he's kind of gripped by these kind of spasms.
Yeah, it's some very good chest burster acting. It's
when he's let out to the woods. So we see these kind of flames being held aloft by there's about six or seven. We can't see the people, but we see the flames coming towards him, and we get this glimpse of the masked figure. And the teaser ends with a slow motion shot of the axe being sort of brought down. So what do you think about this sequence then, to kick us off?
I thought it was pretty good. The sort of run through the woods where he's trying to catch up with Paula is pretty well done. It builds up the tension, especially when you start to see the people there with the torches. You're not quite sure what's going on. And the guy with the mask is definitely a surprise. Wasn't exactly expecting someone like that in the middle of the woods. Yeah, it's definitely creepy and leaves you with a lot of questions, because it's not like some X-Files teasers where you know straight away, okay, so this is going to be a ghost or man who can stretch. You know, it's like, okay, this person in the mask, is it a person? If so, what are they doing there? Is it something else? It's definitely something that leaves you wanting to watch the rest of the episode to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially because we don't see the masked figure again for quite a while. I think it's well over half an hour into the episode until we see that person again. So that first glimpse of him's got to carry us quite a long way. So what did you think about, you know, aesthetically, the way this figure looked, the mask and everything? I thought it was quite an imposing presence.
Yeah, and it's something that you've not quite seen on the X-Files before. I know the X-Files' history of borrowing from different cultures isn't always the best. Like, on the Kalasari episode, you were saying how that, you know, they got the Kalasari completely wrong. But you see this and it's like, okay, this is definitely some sort of native tribal type masks, probably from South America, but we've not quite seen that explored yet, anything around that kind of history or culture. So it definitely stands out as something that they've not really touched on before. Whichever direction it's going to go, whether it's a person or a creature, it's something that definitely pops on the screen when you see it for the first time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And also, so some of the music we get in this sequence from Mark Snow, don't know exactly how to describe it. I'm going to say the tribal horn music, which he's used before, and we've heard it in episodes like Fresh Bones. And that's another bit of a tip, a hint that, yeah, this is something from another culture, like you say. And, I think it's effective. We can assume it's, like you say, South American or Latin American or something, but it's quite incongruous because we're out in the woods. And, I like the way this sets up the rest of the episode. And then we get a scene in the X-Files office, and this is quite a few weeks afterwards. He's been missing for a while, the guy, George Kearns. And it's Mulder and Scully talking about the case. It starts off in an odd way, I think, because Scully's a bit agitated about whether this case is worthwhile. So it wasn't the traditional Mulder slideshow, you know, and they're quite relaxed that we get sometimes. It was quite different to that.
This kind of conversation, you could probably flip a lot of the dialogue and it wouldn't feel out of place, because for once it's Scully worried that they're being sent on a case that has nothing to do with the paranormal. Whereas you'd think she would be okay with any kind of case because it's like, okay, something's gone on, someone's missing, we need to go find them. But instead it's, well, Mulder, they're wasting our time. It's very, it kind of feels a little bit out of character, but it still works.
Yeah, it's I don't think it explicitly ties into anything that's come before. So it is a little strange, I thought. But what I did like was that the way Mulder uses the video he has of somebody else who turned up near Dudley, Arkansas, and he uses that to sort of appeal to her medical interests.
Yeah, it's definitely the point where she gets her interest piqued is by watching that video, even though it potentially has nothing to do with the case. It at least makes her think, okay, there could be something more to this.
Yeah, and Gillian Anderson has a nice little moment where she, you can sort of see her interest piqued, or you can see her resistance melt away a little bit. And there's no real dialogue there, but she does it well.
Yeah, it's all just done in the facial expression when she's watching the video, and it's subtle, but you can definitely see that she's thinking, okay, I'm going to go along with this, see where this is going to go now.
Obviously, they agreed to take on the case, and we're next in Dudley, Arkansas itself. And Mulder and Scully meet with the local sheriff, and this guy is obviously going to be critical to what goes on later. The actor's name is Gary Grubbs, and X-Files fans will probably remember him more from his role in Fight the Future than this. In Fight the Future, he's the fire captain or something, who is trying to help the guys, the boys who get down the hole until the syndicate turn up and sort of overrun things. People will know him from that, and I remember from last time, Amy, you told me as well that he's in Angel as well, isn't he?
He's in several episodes because he plays Fred's father, and much like his character in this, he's just really nice, or at least, you know, well, he comes across really nice in this. He's one of the nicest local sheriffs they've ever dealt with at this point. He just smiles and happy to help.
Yeah, he's got a very appealing presence, isn't he, as an actor? So he's a good fit for this kind of, you know, local law enforcement type role. But at this point, he's not convinced that any investigation is necessary. And that's what he tells Mulder and Scully. He gives them a bit of backstory on George Kearns. I think he talks about how he was known for stepping out on his wife. And he's a bit of an outsider in the community. So I guess that's what this scene does in terms of the plot.
And it feels really genuine as well. Whereas a lot of the X-Files episodes, when the local law enforcement are against investigating something, it comes across more as they're just being antagonistic. But his explanation, it's like, okay, yeah, no, I can get why they've only filed a missing persons report and why they're not investigating a murder or a disappearance. He sells it very well, I think.
Yeah, that's true, actually, because yeah, you're right. Normally there's some kind of opposition from the local sheriff or the local law enforcement, but yeah, he's quite, you know, he seems quite willing to go along with them, except he just doesn't think it's necessary, yeah? The next scene is they visit Kearns' wife, and Mulder discovers that George Kearns had written a critical report of the Chaco chicken plant, and obviously that sets his mind worrying. Is this something to do with what's going on? What did you think of the figure of Kearns' wife in all this? Because she goes on to be quite important a bit later
on.
Yeah.
Later on, her role definitely increases, but at this point, she's very much forgettable as soon as that scene's done. It's not until she reappears later in the episode that I actually remembered she was even in the episode. She comes along, gives Mulder and Scully relevant information that kind of supports the idea that her husband probably ran away with a young woman, even though, having seen the teaser, we know that didn't happen. And, yeah, you very much get the impression that she's a wife who probably had just had enough of her marriage by that point, so she isn't massively upset that her husband's gone.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So Mulder and Scully head to Chaco Chicken, and I think what a lot of people remember from this episode is the stuff about the chicken factory, in addition to the cannibalism that we get later on. This is quite an important sequence then in the episode. So Mulder and Scully interview the factory manager, and his name is Jess Harold. And this actor, Timothy Weber, he'd been in a couple of other episodes. He'd already been in Tombs, but his most memorable role is in the episode Quagmire as Dr. Faraday. So we meet him. We see Paula again from the teaser sequence, and she's clearly unwell. And at one point, she's at her workstation, and has a vision of a head, like a severed head, among the chickens. And that's quite a striking moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a really gruesome moment, and it could have very easily been quite silly, with a severed head suddenly rolling past on a conveyor belt. But I think the way it's shot, how it keeps cutting from her to the chickens, and it's getting louder, and you're seeing them zip past, and then suddenly there's a head in there. You kind of feel the tension that she's feeling, and it I think the way it's shot and edited definitely helps make that scene actually work rather than being quite goofy.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, the editing is quite effective, and then the sound, because the sort of sound of the factory sort of comes up in the mix as well, and it combines to make it a nice moment. Yeah, I agree. So the factory manager at one point mentions that Kearns had a compensation claim in for something called line hypnosis, and that will figure into the plot later as we get through it. One thing I'd say here is that Mulder and Scully should have been wearing some personal protective equipment, definitely. I don't think you get away with that in this day and age, walking around the factory floor with no gear on.
Which is odd, as every other employee seems to be wearing gloves and hairnets.
So what did you think of the setting itself? So do you think this... I mean, I don't know where they filmed this, but I think it looks the part as a potential chicken factory. I think it fits the bill nicely.
Yeah, well, I was thinking that when I was watching it. I was like, I don't know if it was actually filmed in a chicken factory, but it's believable as one. There's no point where I thought it looks like a set or someone's just thrown something together. So I think it works that way. You don't get drawn out of the story from the setting at all. It helps to build on the story, and it's believable, definitely, especially them talking about line hypnosis and the bit where you see Paula watching the chickens go by and all that. You can definitely believe that people get bored stupid in that job, and it does affect them.
Yeah,
from that point of view.
Yeah, I agree. I think it captures, you know, it fits the bill perfectly as what it's supposed to be. So in terms of the plot, what happens is that Paula holds the manager at knife point, sorry, not gunpoint, knife point, and then the sheriff appears and shoots her dead. So the next scene after that is we meet the doctor, and this actor is called Robin Mosley, and he's appeared in other episodes of The X-Files. He was in Young at Heart as Dr. Ridley, and he also appeared in the episode Terma. So he's another one of those faces that turns up multiple times in The X-Files. And here he checks out the manager, and he says that Paula and George Kearns exhibited similar symptoms, so we're wondering what's going on. But he can't authorise an autopsy because Paula's grandfather would need to give the authorization. And so that sends Mulder and Scully off to visit Mr. Chaco himself. So, we meet Mr. Chaco. What do you think of this guy? He's quite pivotal to what goes on later. What did you think of the first impression we make of him?
He's a little odd, definitely. he's got that sort of stereotypical air that they put on people in films and TV, where it's someone who helped build up the town, who, in his case, like the chicken industry for years. So he's sort of talking philosophically about chickens whilst he's feeding them. It's almost comical, but the actor they chose does it well enough that it doesn't feel silly when he's doing it. And I guess you can say that he's acting strange in a certain way because he's just found out his granddaughter tried to kill someone and was then shot. So there's that thrown in there, but he seems like a good choice for the role. He definitely fits that kind of old founding member of the community kind of figure very well.
Yeah, I think that moment you mentioned where he has this sort of philosophical reflection on how chickens are the perfect creature is quite amusing. I like that. I enjoyed it. And I suppose in terms of the plot, it's quite important here that he accepts Mulder and Scully's request, because if he didn't, their investigation might have been stopped in its tracks. So
yeah.
So we can thank him for that. I just wanted to backtrack slightly, because what I wanted to mention just quickly was that when they ring the bell to the house, we don't see how they get through the house. And that, I'm going to point out, that is important later. We just see them ring the bell, and then we see them come out the back. So when we get to the tail end of the episode, I wanted to just revisit that slightly. Okay, so Mr. Chaco has accepted their request for the autopsy. So Scully carries it out, and she finds evidence of something called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And at the same time, Mulder discovers that Paula is apparently 47, even though she looks, what, early 20s, from what we see of her?
I think the actress herself was about 22, 23 when they filmed it, so they definitely didn't cast a 47-year-old.
No. And, of course, that's is relevant, because it it comes to be a factor in exactly why the cannibalism that's taking place is going on. It's quite quaint, isn't it, in a way, because to find out what's going on with her being apparently 47, they have to go to the courthouse to find records. So, you know, this is still at that point where not everything is digitalized. You need to do some legwork to figure stuff out. But on the way there, on the way to the courthouse, they almost crash into a Chaco Chicken van driver who swerves off the road and ends up in the river, which is unlucky. And
a piece of absolutely great timing.
It is great timing, isn't it? I mean, it's convenient for the plot, but it means that we can have Mulder and Scully there at the same time as this, you know, as this vehicle heads off the road. So I suppose it adds to the drama, despite the fact that it's quite contrived.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine it would probably have been cheaper for the production if they'd have got a phone call saying a driver's just gone into the river rather than actually filming it. But yeah, it definitely does add a little bit of oomph partway through.
Yeah, and there's a shot there where the water's filling up with like feathers and the blood from the chickens and stuff. And so the next phase of the episode is the fallout from that, essentially. So we get a bit of a time jump, and then Scully says the driver also had symptoms of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. So Scully's theory is that George Kearns may have been eaten. He may have been put in the feed grinder, been eaten, so he's passing on the disease to other factory workers. And Mulder asks for Sheriff to drag the river to, you know, to see what's in there. And again, the Sheriff agrees that if he hadn't agreed, I suppose the Sheriff had to go along with Mulder to an extent, didn't he? Because he didn't want to be seen to obstruct their investigation.
Yeah, well, there is that moment where he's sort of against it, asking why he's got to, even though he paints it less as a, you know, you're going to find something out kind of view, and more of a, well, I just don't want to go in the river because it's horrible. But Mulder's like, well, if you're not going to do it, I'll get my people in. So he kind of, it's going to happen one way or another, whether or not he agrees to it. So
yeah, so it's better off that he investigates it rather than Mulder and potentially find more. But even so they discover bones in the river. So it depends on whether the Sheriff is, you know, are his men in on it with him? Because if so, why didn't they cover it up? Why were they so open about the fact that they found bones when presumably they could have been a bit more deceptive about it?
Yeah, I suppose if the police department come back to Mulder and say, we've searched the river, we didn't find anything, he'd have had to have believed that. So, yeah, I guess I hadn't thought of that. I guess not all of the people who were searching the river were in on it, because otherwise why bring up the bones?
Yeah, this is what I was wondering later on, because we find out that lots of the townsfolk are involved, but perhaps if not everybody is, then that complicates matters somewhat. So maybe that's it. So Scully is able to identify some of the bones as being from George Kearns, and she says that some of them are up to 30 years old, and they've all been sort of smoothed and polished at the ends. So something's, I think they speculate it could have been the water or something.
Like, yeah, the current, they say it could have been the water, but why is it just the ends of the bones in that case? So that gets kind of thrown out quite quick as a possibility.
Yeah. And then we get a strange little scene where the first time you watch this episode, you don't know exactly what's being said, in the sense that the Sheriff tells Kearns' wife that his remains have been found, and there's a line in there about, we'll take care of you. As we discover more about what's going on, we realise exactly, you know, we realise a bit more clearly what he's talking about. Back at the factory then, so we're getting quite a bit here where Mulder and Scully are off-screen just for a little bit, and we're finding out more about the townsfolk. So the doctor confronts the factory manager about the bones, and he's talking about how more and more people are coming down with symptoms. So Jess Harrell, the manager, he decides to talk to Mr. Chaco, and it's that relationship between him and Mr. Chaco comes on to be important later on, because we don't really establish why, but there's a bit of a generational split, isn't there, between those two. And they've got different philosophies about, you know, exactly what should happen going forward.
Yeah, you can definitely see a little bit of tension there. That's probably quite a bit of the driving force behind the episode, actually, is Chaco's views versus the rest of the community. But it doesn't play too heavily into the plot, really.
No, it doesn't. Not until later on, at least, anyway. So we get a funny little... Then we're back to Mulder and Scully, then. So we get a nice little scene where Scully walks in carrying a big bucket of fried chicken. And that leads to a bit of a punchline at the end of the scene. But what happens is that Mulder has discovered that a lot of people have disappeared in the area. So there's this history of strange events. And it's at this point that he hypothesizes that cannibalism has been going on in the town. And he makes the link between that and long life. So he's obviously connecting the dots between that and Paula being so, you know, 47 but not looking it. And there's a nice little moment where he mentions the Anasazi tribe, and I say it's nice just because we know the next episode is Anasazi.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of foreshadowing of that. Scully, of course, argues the point, as you'd expect, and what it boils down to is that they still need to ascertain exactly are the records right on Paula, because that the case will turn either way on whether, you know, her age being a discrepancy is right or not. Yeah, but it ends, doesn't it, with Scully takes a nice little sideways look at the chicken and leaves it and as they leave the room. So there's a nice little bit of comedy in the scene underpinning the plot points.
It did surprise me the first time I saw it that she'd come in to a room full of bones carrying a bucket of chicken after visiting a chicken factory. It did seem a little unusual, but I remember last time you recorded, you actually said that it's quite common for people to want chicken after visiting a chicken factory, which still surprises me.
Yeah, well, just to give a bit of background to that. So, yeah, my partner works for a company that's involved with chicken and poultry, and she's has to visit factories from time to time. Yeah, she said that it's surprising because it's not what you'd expect. You'd expect it to be the other way, but people who visit factories often, I don't know if it's because all you can think about is chicken, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, you come away and that's what you want to eat. Having said that, I still think it's a bit odd that Scully walks in with this big mega bucket of chicken, but I think it's worth it for the joke at the end. But on the issue of, I asked you this before, Emery, but on the issue of cannibalism, so we now know that cannibalism, or at least Mulder suspects that cannibalism is at play here.
Mm-hmm.
So under what circumstances, Amy, would you eat another person?
Oh, well, if the cupboards are empty, you know, fair game.
Yeah. not as a lifestyle choice, but as, you know, out of necessity, you can do it.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that a lot of people would say that if it was the only option to survive, kind of like in the film Alive, you know, you've got nothing to survive on other than the bodies around you. I think most people would make that concession at that point. If it's a similar situation but you don't have any dead bodies and it's okay, so I'm gonna have to kill someone and eat them, that's probably when it get a little bit harder to be okay with it.
Yeah, because this community, I mean, they're all doing it to prolong their life, we find out. But I don't know, they're all kind of on board with it, aren't they? But you'd expect, I don't know, you'd expect a reasonable amount of dissent within the community, wouldn't you? About, you know, they all seem quite happily signed up to it. So I'm quite interested in the backstory of exactly how that came to be.
Yeah, he's either sold people on it really, really well, or they've eaten half of the town.
Yeah.
it's going to be one or the other.
Yeah, I suppose, like I said, there were a lot of people who've gone missing. But it just seems quite a high-risk strategy to me that, you know, it'd be quite hard to keep this secret, I think. But I suppose this is pre-internet and everything. Okay, so we get, we get another scene without Mulder and Scully. So at this point, they're sort of, their purpose is to move the plot along, and then we get these scenes with the other people. So it's back at Chaco's house. It's Chaco and the factory manager arguing. Then Mrs. Kearns turns up, and she's worried about being a suspect, I think. Chaco says he's going to take care of her. He's going to look after her. But the factory manager, he clearly thinks that she's a bit of a liability because of her heightened emotional state, I think. However, there's a disagreement because Mr. Chaco is more concerned about the FBI, Mulder and Scully. So they disagree at this point about what to do about the situation. Mulder and Scully turn up at the courthouse. Yeah, and I think it's about this point of the episode where, you know, we get these nighttime scenes, and the atmosphere of them is good, I think. You know, we get this courthouse, they use their flashlights to investigate and everything, and it looks and feels suitably impressive. So what they find out is that the birth records have all been set on fire, conveniently, or inconveniently, I suppose. And Mulder receives a call from Mrs. Kearns. She's scared for her life. So Mulder and Scully split up, don't they? Scully heads off to see her, whereas Mulder goes back to the Chaco house. But what we see, now this is the second time we see the masked figure then, because he turns up at Mrs. Kern's house and he attacks her. So do you agree, Amy? I know you said earlier the mid part of the episode is not the strongest, but do you think it's fair to say it's about this point where things start to pick up a little bit?
Yeah, I think from here on the tension definitely starts to build. Like when Scully arrives at Mrs. Kern's house, there's definitely tension when she's searching around and you know that the masked person is there, or at least has been there recently. And then I guess from this point really the episode doesn't really stop. It just it keeps going until the big showdown. It just keeps building and building. And yeah, they rely on the Scully getting kidnapped trope, but it definitely gives the latter part of the episode a lot of energy that it's not really had up to this point.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Scully, like you say, she arrives at Mrs. Kearns's house, and it's quite a lengthy scene here where nothing really is happening. Scully's just having a bit of a look around, but it's very effective nonetheless. Rob Bowman does a good job building tension here, and he can be very good at that. I think his first episode was Genderbender, and even though I don't think that was the strongest script, I thought he was good at generating some effective suspense in that episode. Yeah, so Scully turns up, and just because of the way she moves through the house, and, you know, you got the wind blowing and everything, it's a nice, creepy little scene. And it's kind of intercut with Mulder, so we go back and forth. Mulder's turned up at Chaco's house, and, yeah, he just comes in the door, doesn't he? He's admitted, it's late at night, the maid lets him in, and he discovers evidence that Chaco spent time in New Guinea with, I think they say the Jale tribe, I think. Is how they say it, but it's J-A-L-E. And what I was wondering is, so this is what I was talking about before, this evidence is right by the front door, isn't it, on a big cabinet?
Yeah, there's no hiding
photos
it.
Photos of this time he spent, and he's with the tribesmen and everything. So if they were let in through the front door earlier, there's no way Mulder and Scully would have walked past this and not noticed it.
Yeah, it's like there is a, not like a doorway, but like an alcove sort of walk-through right before the cabinet. But even so, you'd imagine even if you're just walking past it, you're going to notice the fact that there's a human skull and an axe made out of bones in that cupboard. You'd at least sort of stop and go, "Hey, Scully, have you seen this? This is weird shit." You know, especially Mulder, he would pick up on that really quickly. So it does kind of make you think the maid walks them around the side of the house rather than letting them come through.
Yeah, and obviously the editing earlier on disguises it. So it only really becomes apparent if you go back and think about it, I think. Yeah, so Chaco's not home, or apparently he's not home. So Mulder decides to break open the filing cabinet because he's just intrigued, isn't he, by this locked cabinet that's there.
Yeah, the cabinet that you can conveniently see in the random mirror.
That's right.
In the it's I found that very strange, yeah. The way there's a little mirror which is showing this cabinet. It's like, why would Chaco have that set up in there? It seems purely to be for Mulder's benefit. So that he can go, wait a minute, maybe there's something in there as well.
Yeah, the logic of this moment is a bit puzzling, I think, because obviously he breaks open the cabinet and he finds all these severed heads, doesn't he? And it's quite a scary, you know, it's quite a creepy, scary moment.
Until yeah, it's definitely
until
disturbing.
You think, why is he keeping all these heads, you know, by the front door? It seems a bit, I don't know, is it likely, or is it just, you know, it provides a nice moment and that's good enough, I suppose.
It definitely works in the moment. It ups the creep factor. Whether or not, I don't know the logic behind it, unless it's something that isn't explored in the episode, because Chaco is definitely coming from this as a point of view of that there's a culture behind the cannibalism that he learned from the tribe's people, rather than just eating people for the sake of it. So maybe keeping the heads is a part of that, and there's some sort of ritualistic purpose behind it, but it doesn't really get explored, so it just seems like he's keeping gruesome trophies for no reason. But
yeah, that's intriguing, actually. Yeah, I think the backstory potentially could be very interesting here, couldn't it? I mean, it's fair enough, obviously they haven't got time to explore it in too much depth, but it would have been interesting nonetheless, wouldn't it, to find out more.
This moment does kind of reinforce the idea that maybe not the whole town knows about what's happening, because the maid seems absolutely horrified by seeing the heads in there, and you'd think if everyone was in on it, she'd definitely know that that's a cupboard full of heads, unless she's just playing up for Mulder to give the impression that she's not involved. But it seemed quite genuine.
I assume that she didn't know about it. So you're right, it does perhaps suggest that, you know, not everybody in the town is in on it. Perhaps it's just the pillars of the community, possibly, who really know what's going on. So at this point, Mulder and Scully speak on the phone. Yeah, there's a moment here I'm not as fussed on. So it's Chaco attacks Scully, but it's off screen. So I find it, you know, obviously he had the element of surprise on her because she didn't know he was there. But I think the fact that we don't see it, you accept it. But obviously Scully normally fends for herself very well. So it's slightly cheap, perhaps, that she's kind of incapacitated and we don't see it. Especially by such an old guy.
I imagine he must have had the element of surprise, because after everything Scully's been through, by this point, she'd have at least should have invested in some self-defense classes the amount of time she gets kidnapped. So for someone who's, what, 90-something, to take her by surprise, there's definitely a little bit of artistic license going on there, which is probably why they didn't show it.
Yeah, well, I would just compare it to something like Squeeze, where she gets surprised in her apartment in that episode, but, you know, at that point she really does fight her corner. I think I prefer that kind of thing to this, where she's subdued very easily from what we can see. But anyway, so these things happen, don't they? So the next thing we see is there's a ritual ceremony out in the field. So all the townspeople being fed with what looks like soup. You know, we assume it's people soup, basically. Chaco brings Scully. So Scully's gagged, isn't she? So we don't really, you know, she's pretty much a passenger at this point. But Chaco's upset that Mrs. Kearns has been killed. But the community's sort of rounded on him, haven't they? And he's copping the blame for bringing her in, bringing the outsider in. So you've got this weird, you know, you've got this dynamic where he's kind of the founder or whatever. Or he's always been the leader, but now he's losing his grip.
Yeah, it definitely seems like people have turned against him and he's got no control anymore.
So what did you think of this scene as a whole then, you know, this sequence?
I thought it was okay. You know, it wasn't anything spectacular, but you could see enough of the backstory from what was happening here that Chaco was clearly at one point the leader of the community, that he brought this practice to them, but now he's viewed as the old man whose views don't fit anymore and people are turning against him. So you do kind of get a sense of people's motivations and the backstory of the episode through the interaction, which helps fill in some of the blanks. But yeah, it's not the most exciting until the marksman comes out and they actually proper turn on Chaco. When he first turns up, it's very much something that you've seen before.
Chaco pulls a gun on the factory manager, but the masked figure, you know, we still don't know exactly who it is at this point, unless we've guessed. But, we see him again. Scully's just a spectator, really, like I said. And they get rid of Chaco, don't they? They put him in this vice-like object and they behead him.
A very different kind of device than what you would normally see it. Most things like that, the people would be put on a block and just held down. So for the head to be strapped in with this sort of metal bar type thing, it's very gruesome in a different kind of way. It's not something you normally see, and I think helps make this scene stand out as a bit more disturbing.
Yeah, there's a nice moment, I think, where Scully's about to be put in the vice and we get a point of view shot from her and it's just the camera moving towards it. And it only lasts for a couple of seconds, but I thought that, in conjunction with the music that we get at that time, it does actually generate a bit of tension, even though we know there's no way that, you know, she's going to be beheaded. But nonetheless, it works quite well. On the other hand, Mulder's racing to the scene, or he's trying to find out where they are. He sees some lights, doesn't he? Which is how he figures out what's going on. But the shot we get of him driving, he doesn't seem, considering how harrowed we've seen him when Scully got abducted, and how tense he was when Donnie Faster kidnapped her. Here, he doesn't seem unduly concerned, to be honest.
Yeah, it's I guess I didn't really pick up on that first time round, but yeah, he doesn't seem as gung-ho as he normally is in those situations. Maybe, you know, it could be that he's just sick of Scully getting kidnapped as well. But he definitely seems a bit more relaxed this time round, which is odd considering she's been kidnapped by a town full of people rather than just one person, where maybe she'd have a chance of defending herself. But when there's like 20, 30, 40 people, it's definitely the more dangerous situation for her.
Yeah, well, I suppose he possibly doesn't know exactly that's what's happened at this point, does he? He just knows she's, you know, she's not answered the phone to him, I suppose. But also,
she's,
he knows it's only
again
a standalone episode.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a mythology episode, so she should be okay. So the way it's resolved is that Mulder turns up and shoots the man in the mask. The crowd kind of splits, doesn't it? The crowd disperses and tramples the factory manager to death. Yeah, I'm not sure that convinced me too much, that moment where he's trampled.
It feels like a weak way of getting rid of him.
So Scully, obviously Mulder then is able to kind of free Scully from, you know, from her plight. I don't know if you're a shipper exactly, Amy, but what did you think about this moment where they're, you know, they're reunited?
I'm not a big shipper, except the fact that, yeah, Mulder and Scully probably do develop romantic feelings towards each other, because it's something that's likely to happen, two people working so closely together all that time. But yeah, it doesn't strike me as this being a moment where I sort of saw it and went, oh yeah, that is definitely romantic. I think it was more he was just happy that he saved his friend.
Yeah, I think the reason I said that is sometimes in the big episodes or the mythology two-parters, sometimes when they're reunited, you get a nice exchange. But here it's only been a few minutes of screen time, so it's not really played in that way. The other thing that happens is that the sheriff then is unmasked. So the man in the mask was the sheriff, presumably the whole time. That must have been his role in the ritual. Yeah, he's such a nice, appealing actor, doesn't he? But I suppose it is a bit of a surprise, albeit, it's not one that's going to make your jaw drop to the floor.
Yeah, still. I think it has enough of a surprise factor just because he played the part so well, in the sense that if it had turned out at the end that he had no involvement whatsoever, you wouldn't have questioned it. You'd have thought, oh yeah, he's just the nice local sheriff trying to do his job and the kind of guy who you wouldn't mind going for a drink with because he seems really nice. So it does have the shock value from that point of view.
And that's about it then, except that we get this voiceover, don't we, to close things off. So we find out that Chaco Chicken's closed down. No contaminated chicken was discovered. 27 of the citizens are ill with Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. So presumably that's from the soup and such like. And in the voiceover, Scully talks about Chaco's time in New Guinea. And we find out he's 93 years old, whereas, we'd assume he's, about 70, I suppose.
Yeah, they said late 60s, early 70s from the look of him.
And his remains have been undiscovered, is what the voiceover says. So that's what they tell us. But then they show us the chickens feeding. So we're given a bit of a steer as to what's exactly happened to his remains. And that's the end of the episode. I mean, I think it's a good episode. I think this is a nice, solid standalone. And I think it's got a lot going for it. Having said that, it doesn't have the things which really contribute to the standout episodes of The X-Files for me. Having said that, whenever I see it, I enjoy it.
It does its job, and it's entertaining. Doesn't offer anything massively new, but, it's an entertaining episode that doesn't kind of lose you halfway through or make you bored. So I think it's a strong, strong middle episode for that.
Yeah, and the other thing we didn't mention is it's right at the end of quite a long season, and it's been quite, for the production team and the cast and everything, it's been a grueling season. Gillian Anderson's had a baby, and the show's continue to develop in interesting ways. And sometimes when you get to the tail end of seasons, you do get a dodgy episode here and there. But this is quite a strong one for such a late stage of the season.
Yeah, I think it could have been very easy for them to give us a really dead episode at this point, but they were just consistently good right until the end, so that's, I didn't think of it from the production point of view, but that's a good little achievement.
Okay, well, that's quite a nice positive note to end things on, so that concludes our in-depth look at our town.
Pending further review, the Chaco processing plant has been closed by the USDA. So far, no evidence of contaminated chicken has been discovered. Though it remains unknown how many citizens participated in the ritual activity, 27 have become fatally ill with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. What is known is that a transport plane carrying Walter Chaco was shot down in 1944 over New Guinea. Chaco was the only survivor of that crash. According to naval records, he spent 6 months with the Jowlay, a tribe whose cannibalistic practices have long been suspected but never proven. Naval records also show that Walter Chaco was born in 1902, making him 93 years old at the time of his death. As of this date, his remains have yet to be found.
Okay, which leads us to the X quiz. So, just to give a bit of background, Amy has already answered these questions, and she got 5 out of 5. However, that was several months ago when we actually recorded. So,
yes,
we're going to do the quiz again, and we're going to see if her memory has deteriorated since that time.
I can guarantee you it's deteriorated. I can't remember what I did last week, let alone a few months ago.
Yeah, you came in very well prepared last time. So,
yep, and I don't have a single note this time.
Okay, so 4 questions and a quote is what I got for you. And the first one is, in the teaser sequence, what is the name of the road?
Country Road A7?
Ooh, well, it's County Road A7. Oh. I think that's worth half a mark, isn't it? Yeah, County Road A7 is what it is. Second question. According to Mulder, how many weeks has George Kearns been missing for?
Is it 10?
It is 10, yep. Whew. Absolutely. So it's quite a big jump, isn't it, from the teaser to Muldrum Scully getting involved, actually. So the third question. What name is given to the items that Mulder and Scully find staked into the ground when they first arrive in Dudley?
Witch's Peg.
Witch's Pegs, yep, absolutely. Question 4. How many people have disappeared from Dudley in the last 50 years?
78?
Oh, it's 87. You've just flipped the numbers, that's all. 87.
Yeah, so definitely close. Not getting my 5 out of 5 this time.
Yeah. And finally, then a quote. So, I'm surprised she didn't call Oprah as soon as she got off the phone with the police.
That was Scully saying that to Mulder after he described a driver who saw the Foxfires.
Yeah, so it's at the outset of the episode, isn't it, when Scully's hostile to the idea of investigating this case. And she's putting up a bit of resistance. Absolutely. Okay, so not 5 out of 5 this time, I'm afraid, Amy, but still a very solid, creditable 3.5 out of 5. So well done.
Oh, we had to lose that original recording, didn't we? I could have had a perfect score.
Listeners, you'll just have to take my word for it. It was 5 out of 5 originally, but hey, you know, these things happen. Okay, Amy, so thanks very much for joining me to discuss Our Town. What else are you up to online, and where can people find you on social media?
I've got a few things going on. Online, I've got my own podcast, Everything Left, where I get together with different guest hosts and we talk about stuff in the news from mostly politics. We talk about it from a sort of left-wing point of view. So if you're interested in anything like that, you should definitely check us out. We try and have a little bit of fun with that as well as talking about the serious topics. In addition to that, I've got my own blog site, which is trans-scribe, and that's full of different news stories, reviews, opinion pieces, and random bits and pieces, but there's about 600-700 articles on there, so I'm sure you'll find something that'll interest you out of all of them. So if you want, you can give that a look. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter at @Amazing_Amy_W.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Amy. So, my thanks to you once again for joining me to discuss Our Town. We're almost done with season 2 on the X-Cast. We've just got Anna Sarsi left, and Tony will be back very soon to talk about that. But until next time, always remember, trust no one.
The X-Cast is produced and presented by Tony Black, part of the Black Hole Media podcast network. Title music is courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter @IAmWillAye.